So, welcome to the 18th Pedagogical Cafe or Learning Cafe. And today we have as a guest Jussi Jokinen from the Cognitive Sciences. And today we have a very interesting topic as the artificial intelligence or machine learning also, and how to utilize it perhaps on the work or learning. And Jussi will give a presentation about that. So, you're welcome. Please go on, Jussi.
Thanks, Ville. So just for ground rules, it's a very debatable topic. So maybe I first present and then we discuss. If you have any questions, you can put them in chat and then we'll go through them later. Or you can just then ask them when you have time for discussion at the end. What else? If my voice doesn't work or if it sounds like based on my speech, I should be changing slides, but nothing changes on your end. So there's some technical problems. Then you should tell me and stop me, and then we'll figure it out. And also, if I'm using a like a word or a concept that I'm continuously using and you don't understand what it is, you can ask, please clarify that. I don't understand what you're talking about because you're using words that I don't know. So these are the ground rules. Some notes before we start, and now is the first slides change. So now tell me if you don't see a new slide. I'm speaking as a teacher and a cognitive scientist today. So I'm also koulutusvastaava in the faculty, but I'm not speaking in that role today. And while the title says AI, we are basically talking about large language models today. Now, this technology is moving really fast. It's a bit more than half a year then suddenly everybody became aware of large language models due to ChatGPT, of course. And it's continuously and rapidly still developing. While we are still trying to adapt, the students are adapting how to use large language models in their learning. We teachers are adapting how to use LLMs in teaching. And meanwhile, the technology is not like waiting for us to adapt, but it's developing constantly. So this is a very, I can understand that this topic raises a lot of emotions. And I don't know what the correct answers are, and I don't think anybody yet knows. We just have to hold on to our hats and hope that the next couple of years and tens of years will be good for us and not bad for us. So let's start with a Q&A where I ask the questions and give the answers. Do I need to care? If I'm a teacher, do I need to care about large language models or AI more generally? And my answer to you is yes, you have to care. It's not a gimmick, it's not a toy. So you have to assume that this is a transformational technology in education and in society more generally. And the transformation, we're also already seeing that, but we're just starting to see that it's going to be bigger in a couple of years. So you do need to care, in my opinion. Well, you're here today, so I suppose you already care, but maybe convey this message to others as well. Should I ban it or should I embrace it? Universities around the world have had different approaches. Some try to ban it completely, and it's by it I of course mean ChatGPT, but in the future we might be talking about more generally generative AI. I say embrace it. Even if you want to ban it, you should embrace it so you know how to use it efficiently, and then you know how to limit its uses effectively when you want to do that. So in order to know what it is, to take it seriously and know how to embrace it, maybe in order to limit its use, today's talk. So we have three topics today. First, I'm going to ask what intelligence is. Then we're going to do a quick machine learning 101. How does generative AI work? And then for the most speculative section, the third section, but probably the most important one, I'm going to share some of my initial thoughts about how large language models are or could be used in higher education. The problem is we don't have data for this yet, like scientific research, because it's a very new thing and it's developing rapidly. And at that point, I hope that you also have ideas and we can discuss and share best practices or best ideas at least. So let's start with intelligence and what it is. There can, of course, be many definitions, but we need something that we can get an easy hold on so that we can ask about the intelligence of artificial agents such as ChatGPT. Let's take a simple definition, therefore. This one is from Russell, and Russell is one of the key players in today's discussions about human and AI and how they can go together and what are the limits of AI. Russell defines intelligence such that an agent is intelligent to the extent that its actions can be expected to achieve its objectives. An agent is, by the way, a word. It doesn't mean like a secret agent. It's just anything that can take actions that has an agency. Therefore, it's called an agent. It can be an artificial agent or a natural agent. Okay, so let's look at this definition and how it works. Here is Data, the Android. Data, the Android, doesn't actually exist. We don't have this level of artificial intelligence yet. We may never have this level of artificial intelligence. But to paint your picture, Data is a machine that looks like a human, can discuss with other human beings, can fly a starship in this science fiction show, Star Trek, can fight Romulans, can go to away missions on planets. So now, is data intelligent? According to this definition, the extent its actions can be accepted to expected to achieve its objectives, data is definitely intelligent. So let's go on. Here is AlphaGo. In 2016, DeepMind's AlphaGo won, the top player in Go, Lee Sedol. And for many, me included, this was kind of a watershed moment where I realized that deep learning is going to change stuff in the future. And we're now seeing that. But is AlphaGo intelligent? Well, no, in my opinion, AlphaGo is not intelligent. But if you look at this definition, AlphaGo has objectives, which is to win the game of Go. And we do expect that its actions achieve these objectives because AlphaGo plays at the superhuman level. So according to this definition, AlphaGo is intelligent, which in my opinion starts to question the definition. Just to put the nail on the coffin, sunflowers. Let's say that the objective of a sunflower is to get energy from the sun. And the sunflower is also able to turn towards the sun when the sun is moving in the sky. And so we actually should now regard sunflowers as intelligent because they can turn towards the sun, so they can take actions, and we expect these actions to help the sunflower achieve its objectives. So what's wrong with this definition? Why can we regard data as intelligent but sunflowers as not? What do we need to change in here in this definition? And so here is an augmentation of that definition. An agent is intelligent to the extent that its actions can be expected to achieve its objectives in a wide range of environments. And this is important because it changes the focus of how we inspect intelligence of artificial agents. We don't ask whether they do well the thing that they are supposed to do. We ask, what is the environment in which they perform? How generalizable is that environment? Is it a very well-constrained problem space, such as turn towards the sun or win the game of Go? Or is it a very general and broad goal of flying a starship and fighting Romulans or going to missions on a new planet? So we can take a different look at this definition and talk about cognitive abilities that these different intelligent agents may have, whether they are natural or artificial. Cognitive abilities help agents to reach their goals by processing information that they get from their senses and maybe from other sources such as their memory or problem-solving capacities, which are also cognitive abilities. On the very lowest level of cognitive abilities, we can specify these task-specific skills, and these generalize only in a very local task domain. This is what most of machine learning is. We have very specific tasks, very constrained and well-defined data set, and then we teach a machine learning algorithm to solve problems within those constraints. Now, we don't consider these sorts of agents intelligent, although they may perform really well in their task environment. So in order to get intelligence, we have to step up to a higher hierarchical level. We have to talk about broad cognitive abilities, which is this ability to use a skill set in different local domains. Now, there are some early AI applications that can do this, early being in this context of really rapid development today. For instance, AlphaZero is an agent that can play the game of Go, but it can also play the game of chess or shogi. So it can play different board games, the same agent. So we would argue that that AlphaZero agent has a broad cognitive ability to play different types of one versus one player board games. But that's still far from general intelligence, which is the highest level in our hierarchy, which means that we don't only play different board games, but we can actually step back from that domain and go to a completely different domain, maybe flying starships, and use some skills that we use when playing board games to win battles of starships. So this is the level of analysis we have to deal with. Now, where is the current large language model level? It's somewhere in the broad cognitive abilities level, and there are some suggestions that, for instance, GPT-4, which is currently the most powerful large language model, exhibits some sparks of this general intelligence, but you can disagree on that, and I don't know what I think myself. Okay, so how does it work? How does it achieve at least some sort of a mid-level intelligence in this hierarchical space that I defined? Machine learning 101 in just a couple of slides. Let's see how I do. So we start with data, and we want to make sense of that data. So we have a machine learning model. It's some sort of a set of algorithms that looks into the data and it tries to complete some sort of tasks, where the better you understand the complex patterns in the data, the better you can do the task. And then we start training the machine learning model. It configures itself. That is, it starts to model the patterns in the data. That's where the word model comes from, such that it can complete tasks that require a good model of the patterns in the data, in order to do some sort of a prediction or decision. This is the basic approach to machine learning. Of course, the key here is how the ML model here is created. Today, the most prevalent and probably powerful method is deep learning, where there are multiple layers of these artificial neurons. And they seem to enable really complex pattern recognition and decision making with like a finite number of neurons and layers. It's actually not magical, although if you're not familiar with deep learning, it may just sound like something. It's a huge black box, and just something weird happens, and then the machine learning model learns to generalize the data set it's been trained with. But I suggest everybody go to this playground.tensorflow.org when you have some time to spare and play around. You can create your own artificial neural networks, add layers, make them deep learning models, have different source of data, and then see exactly what happens in the black box. What happens when the artificial neural network learns to classify data. Now, this is a really powerful approach, and it can be used for language as well. So it looks like neural networks, when given language as data, they can learn patterns in that language. So given a lot of data, documents, or something else that contain language, the machine learning model can learn to model that language so that it can generate new language based on some prompt that is given to it. So it learns to predict what might come next in the sentence. Generally, the machine learning models, they don't learn to predict words like I hear visualized, but rather tokens. And token can be a word or a subword. So that's a technical term used here. Now, the problem with this approach is that language is somehow different than very many other data sets. That is because language is really, really context dependent, and deep neural networks have trouble with this sort of really rich context. So the classic example is from Wittgenstein. If somebody shouts water, what does that mean? Well, it depends on the context. If you're in a restaurant and somebody shouts water to a waiter, by the way, of course you shouldn't do that. That's rude. But if you do that, the message is clear. I want water. I want you to bring me water. But then let's say somebody else is in a kitchen and there's a lot of water on the floor and they shout water. It doesn't mean that they want somebody to bring them water. It means that there are petrified to find that their kitchen may be damaged by water. It's a fun game. Try to imagine or think of as many different scenarios where somebody shouts water and the interpretation is completely different. How many can you think of? I think like don't check from internet because that's cheating, but do this as a fun exercise. I think you can come up with really many examples where it makes sense to shout water, but the content of this short sentence is completely different due to it having a different context. And machine learning has had trouble with this sort of context awareness until transformers were introduced in 2017. Transformers are a way to make the network sensitive to context. So they tell what tokens or words or subwords to focus in a given data set or a given input. So here we have two example words where the word, example sentences where the word it refers to different things in these two sentences, and the transformer is able to figure out where the it refers to based on having just learned a lot and a lot of data. So while training the transformer neural network, it learns the main task, which is to predict the next token given some previous text. But it also learns this sort of a transformer tensor, which tells what tokens are important and what are not important. So where should you be paying attention? And this is the groundbreaking technology for state-of-the-art language models. And the T in GPT, like ChatGPT, refers to transformers. And the GMP, they, in my opinion, they don't really mean anything much. So GPT is a bad name, but at least they have the T there, which is the key technology. Okay, a quick recap before we go to language and then education. So we have deep neural networks, which learn complex patterns in data. They are given training data, which can be like a large language corpus or a set of images or anything. And then the deep neural network learns those patterns. Transformers, they help these deep neural networks to be context sensitive, giving them, in a way, an attention mechanism, telling where should you be now attending. What is important in this context, when the task is to predict the next token or the next word. This gives us a generative AI where we can generate new content based on just having a model of the data. So a language model is a generative AI, usually a transformative neural network that is trained on a lot of language data, and then it generates text based on predicting what's the most probable token that comes next. And then it uses that prediction, it adds that to the existing text, and then it predicts the next token and the next token and the next token and so on. So why does it work so powerfully? Why is ChatGPT so fascinating technology? Well, I don't think that's a really like a answer where that we can, or a question that we can answer objectively. But it has this, something to do with human language. Human language is a really, really powerful tool that we humans have. It has evolved to model, but now naturally, to model the world, not just the physics of the world, but the abstract of the world. It has learned to model things like time and causal relationships and what other people are thinking. We have language that we can use to express all these really, really complicated things in the world. And as we live in the information age, we have produced a lot of language data that can be then used to train large language models. And so it seems like these large language models, they are intelligent, or they seem intelligent, because they encode and model this problem-solving capacity that has evolved in human language. So when an engineer wants to build a bridge to a place where no bridge has ever existed, the engineer is able to do that because they can think in language. Okay, the bridge needs to go there. What are the mathematical properties? What are the other properties that I need to figure out in order to build the bridge or the planet? And language seems to be the key, because then we can ask ChatGPT to tell us how to build the bridge, and it can do that based on somehow modeling the problem-solving capacity of the language, possibly in the same way that the human engineer is using, possibly in a different way. I don't really know how we should go around testing that, but it's something that we want to know in the future. What's the difference between language modeled as an artificial agent and language as it is utilized by a human being? I want to just mention one PSA before we go into different LLM applications. Deep neural networks, such as our current transform-based large language models, they can be exploited by these adversarial attacks. Deep learning is brittle, and after having learned a model using deep learning, the model is not changed anymore. So if you're using GPT, the model itself is not changing. The only thing that is changing is the context, that is the text that is used as prompt, and then its responses, which like add on to the context. But the network itself is static. And it seems like these networks can be exploited very easily. So this is an information security risk. Just be aware that currently there is no good solution for protecting deep neural networks against these sorts of attacks. So if you plan on using large language model in production, some safety critical systems, you are vulnerable to attacks that humans don't even realize that are attacks. It can be just a very simple text prompt that then ends up doing something catastrophic to the technology that is being used. So that was just a PSA. Right, let's recap. Large language models, they seem to learn core aspects of human language processing, including hierarchical structures, which really gives us this ability to think abstractly and solve very complicated problems. Transformers is the mechanism that gives large language models this ability. However, large language models are not humans in their cognitive capabilities. But now I have added an asterisk there, because this is rapidly evolving field. So there are a lot of reasons to think that this list might not even be correct anymore. But let's go through it. Large language models are not embodied. We humans are. That means that language, it's not just language. It has to make sense. It has to have some rooting in the reality. Otherwise, it doesn't work and we adjust the language. But a large language model doesn't have any reality against which it can test language, which is one of the reasons large language models hallucinate. They come up with stuff that doesn't exist, that isn't real, because they have no way of checking against the reality. Large language models don't have the human cognitive capacity to simulate the physical reality in our mind. So when I throw a ball, I ask, where is the ball landing? I'm not using language to solve that problem. I'm using a simulation of physics. So there's more to intelligence than language. Large language models have trouble with understanding complicated things. They have trouble with transfer learning, which is using a skill set in one domain to solve problems in a completely other domain. Associative long-term memory, large language models forget. It's not like you can keep on discussing for years with a ChatGPT and it remembers things that you have told it 2 years ago. The context length is very small for large language models. And large language models don't use tools as humans to extend their capabilities. But as I said, there are some reasons to think these problems with LLMs will be rectified soon. For instance, there are approaches to have large language models have associative long-term memory, which would improve contextual understanding. You can improve the problem-solving capacity of large language model by exploiting language itself, by asking it to think in language how the problem should be solved before trying to solve it. LLMs can be embodied by putting them into a robot, which then forces the language to work against the reality, which may result in it learning how not to hallucinate and how to transfer skills between different scenarios, as is done in this interesting work by, I think this is Google in Palmyra. And then there are the application interfaces, APIs, which are now rage in the LLM research. So maybe we can give ChatGPT or other large language models an application programming interface to access calendars, calculators, Wolfram Alpha for more complicated mathematics, Wikipedia for checking against facts, maybe some sort of physics simulator for simulating physics as humans do. And this gets them closer to like a broad generalizable intelligence. Some evidence for that is already existing in GPT-4. This is an interesting paper, but also controversial, sparks of artificial general intelligence. It seems like GPT-4 especially can be creative beyond the training data that it's used. For instance, here the authors asked it to draw a unicorn in Tixi. Tixi is like a LaTeX-based figure drawing language. The amazing thing here is that GPT-4 doesn't know what a unicorn looks like, but it has a textual, in a way, understanding of what a unicorn should look like based on just text, and then it can use the text image creation language to make code that will then result in drawing a unicorn. Now, this is not a very good-looking unicorn, but that's not the point. The point is that nobody has drawn a unicorn in Tixi before, but GPT-4 can do that. Then, while large language models don't have an explicit database, unless they are connected to the internet using an API, they have a lot of training data, so they can generate outputs. For instance, here I asked it to mention classic and modern psychological works about working memory and give a synopsis. And this is a list that works. I'm a researcher in this domain and I accept this list as being a good starting point for learning about working memory. Then one more hint, this chain of thought prompting, it may improve response quality. So if you get bad responses from TPT, maybe that's because the prompt itself was incorrect. For instance, there is this known lack in GPT-4 even that it can't list every letter that directly follows a vowel in the alphabet, although this is a really easy task. So for instance, after A comes B, so B should be there. GPT-4 failed to mention B, and it also looks like P does not, no, Q does not follow U, so it's just like this is incorrect. But then I asked it to list all the letters one by one and mark when a vowel follows that, or when it's a vowel and a letter follows. Now GPT-4 actually gave me the correct answer. So it's almost like with humans, you need to think about the problem step by step, and you need to think how the solution happens. So this is a hint for using GPT more efficiently. Okay, and then to end, I have some examples of how I may be using LLMs in future education. I haven't used them yet, but come next fall, we all have to face this question, how to use LLMs in higher education. So I give you a couple of examples and then we can discuss. Maybe LLMs could be used as a personal tutor. So if I'm a student, I instead of going to the teacher and to ask how to do this, I maybe first ask the LLM to come with like a curriculum. Here is an example that I just wrote. I want to understand bubble sort. I'm in programming class. I didn't understand how bubble sort works. What are concepts that I need to understand so that I can understand bubble sort? And here GPT-4 gave me like a curriculum. You need to understand these topics. And then the prompt continues and it like line by line explained how bubble sort works and how these concepts are connected to bubble sort. And then I could, as a student, ask, okay, variables and data types, can you explain more about that? So this could be used to augment teaching by us teachers. One can use large language models as writing assistants. And I know this is controversial and it can be easily considered plagiarism. We have to discuss that. I don't know yet how that discussion is going to go. But here I just prompted it to give me ideas for an essay about Turing's work where Turing introduced the Turing test. Give me some sources, give me an idea for the structure of the essay. And again, I teach these sorts of things, and I think that this is a fine starting point. If a student got this list, they would really get started on the essay work. Of course, they might just like proceed with prompting and ask in the end for the GPT to write the whole thing for themselves. That would then, of course, not give the student the learning outcomes that were intended. Here's one fun idea. You could use large language models to prepare for exams. So in this example, I'm a university student and I want to prepare for a stats exam. I want to quiz myself on t-test, p-values, confidence intervals. And ChatGPT gave me some like quizzes. And as far as I can see, they make sense. Some of them have slight errors, but I think that's fine. So the student then responds to the quiz. ChatGPT tells, well, you got 5 out of 10. Here are your problems. You might want to improve on these. And then the student can it knows where they're still more to learn. Okay, and then finally the caveats. Our university doesn't have guidelines yet, which is uncomfortable, but hopefully next fall 23, we have guidelines so that we know how to talk about large language models at the beginning of a course. But even before guidelines, there are the standard ethical code of conduct rules. Plagiarism is presenting somebody else's work as your own, and that's forbidden, even now. Although one might argue that if you prompt a tool to generate your text, it's your text. Because if I use a tool to do something, it's still mine, although the tool did majority of the work. So we can debate on this as well. We can ask the students to tell how they use large language model to create this essay or this programming exercise, but they may decide not to do that if that can be used against their grading, for example. And so it's really hard to detect large language model misuse. It's not going to be a solution to have some sort of a Turnitin detector. It's not going to work, believe me. It may work for very, very simple cases, but the students will learn workarounds. They learn how to prompt GPT to provide text that cannot be detected reliably. And finally, and I think this is the big part. LLMs currently, they can hallucinate and they can be incorrect. So the student shouldn't rely solely on a large language model. They should rely on their teacher, who of course can also be fallible. So there's that as well. Okay, so the take-home message that I want to give you, and this is my personal opinion. I know not everybody agrees. Encourage your students to improve their learning by leveraging available technologies such as large language models. And design your course activities around the assumption that they will do this. So maybe the essay is dead. Maybe you can't use a normal essay anymore or a coding task. Maybe you need to design the essay around the fact that the student will use a large language model and may not necessarily tell you how they use that. I'm really open to ideas on what your ideas are. How do we redesign activities around this? So that was my talk. Now I really want to discuss.
Yes, please. Now, some questions and viewpoints for Jussi, and thanks for the presentation.
Can see hand by Mirja, but Ville, do you want to be the host who assigns votes?
Yeah, you can also. But
Okay.
Mirja, please.
Were I supposed to write my question or comment into the chat?
No, you
Sorry.
can ask it. Yeah, it was just during the talk.
Oh, okay. Yes. While you were talking, I tried out Chat GPT because I have been expressing some doubts, and the point that I came to after prior trials, and now I tried content course key area of knowledge, asked a question, I got an answer that would be in my view, not a very good answer to an exam question, or if you wish, explanation of this area for a student. It gave us the first point. I was asking about evaluating the business value of an IT investment, and it gave us the first point, return on investment, that in our material, by not only me, but by experts in investment, it is not the first choice for this kind of estimations. Okay, it gave a list of points. And then I used the option to regenerate the response. So giving a hint that I'm not quite satisfied with this. Now it gave a slightly better, broader answer. And still it is giving something that I would consider compared to common knowledge in this area, expertise knowledge, not the very best. And previous trials have been with similar results. So I was thinking, considering your examples, maybe more exact fields of science like mathematics, there were somewhere in the examples, then programming, logic, and so. So there you can more easily rely on on these language models or in broader sense artificial intelligence, and in areas where it becomes maybe like more humanistic knowledge, then there are some difficulty for the AI tools to come up with really the best knowledge of that exists in research and also in practical areas.
It could be. I think that's a well-justified argument. I would be careful with this game of gotchas with ChatGPT, because the technology is improving. If you want to try with GPT-4 the same prompt, you might get a better answer. I don't really use GPT-4 because I don't think it's very good. GPT-4 is a lot more powerful. So it could be that in a couple of years, these are not any more relevant questions, but they still may be. We don't know yet. That's why this is kind of playing in the dark at the moment. But your hypothesis is still, I think, good. And what you might try to do with the prompt, you might say why it's incorrect and why it should try to reshape its answer, or why did it say this one when this is knowledge, common knowledge or expert knowledge, that this is the fact. And yet you can try to understand why it made an incorrect choice, so that you learn to use.
Yes, I have shared my previous experiments with some colleagues who also know the areas, and one experiment was interesting because it seemed that the answer started out with knowledge that would have been current 20 years ago. And also these biases that have been alleged, biases of this tool, they seem to be true. And also, but going on in the discussion, then you end up something more concurrent knowledge and getting, but I was still not so satisfied. This is certainly a good tool for some cases. And now that we are in the season of evaluating master's thesis, I think that many teachers would be grateful if there was some policy to guide students to use, I'm not saying a specific tool, but some tools for improving their language output when they write their work. Having a background in teaching languages, I don't know, and I was actually considering when you were discussing intelligence in the beginning, and intelligence being the ability to work towards a goal. And I was thinking that does it really take human intelligence, and that cannot be replaced with any software, to design curricula for education, because there we have several stages and very long-term goals, and the goal is not just one. We can express it as one, a very capable human being with all kinds of abilities and also changing their behaviors towards like the desirable behaviors. We can look at these tools in the context of a single course, single stage in education. But what about the whole curriculum at the university, and then also already starting at schools? So what should a human being be capable of, and what skills, abilities should they acquire to be able to do without any tool? That's a very rhetoric question, not to be answered, but these kind of thoughts, I just cannot help.
I mean, that's one of the examples that is used. We have reached artificial general intelligence when an AI can take a university diploma, learn it by just doing as other students are doing. So that's a good example. Ansi says something here that I also agree with, and we're going to say, if you increase the prompt, make it more specific, you usually get better answers. Garbage in, garbage out is a classic way to express that. Jonne, you have had a hand up very long.
Yeah, I was about to comment on Mirja's experiences. I have kind of similar experiences, and you said the magic words. Those chat GPTs seem to be garbage in, garbage out. So, but they have done some research, and when they have fed exams from different sciences into ChatGPT, the social sciences and things like that have been those that the ChatGPT has performed most well. And my own experience is also that mathematics and programming and stuff like that, it is mostly to a large level, it is garbage in, garbage in, garbage out. So it does not generate that good answers, but not with specific areas on ours. I used it on one of my exams already in a way that I gave asked for the definition of software architecture. And it gave me several answers, and all those were not so bad, but not good enough either. So I took one of them and asked students to go through it and say what is good and what is bad with it. And at least that was, the students liked that question, and I liked it too. It was a fun question.
And that's something that you might use in teaching for others as well. So have a student interact with the ChatGPT and point out its errors, given what you have learned in the course. That's a good idea. In future, when with these APIs, if ChatGPT or other large language models can actually program and run the program and see the output, that will probably make them better at coding tasks. Although I have had success with coding tasks, given that I know very well how to program, so that I can spot an error, and then I can steer the conversation in the correct direction. But of course, that's not learning really anymore. That's using it for as an expert.
Yes, and the ChatGPT-4 examples of programming have been way much better than the version 3. For me, the 3 also usually hangs. But what do you think about those prompts? Because, for example, those prompts that you had when you were asking consonants and vowels, you actually wrote kind of the program already in the prompt.
So an interesting experiment would have been to ask the question, but then ask ChatGPT to write the program. And see I wouldn't have given it the correct answer, but would have prompted it to do the answer first, and then, and that's what this chain of thought prompting has been evolving into as a science currently, how to prompt GPT to generate prompts so that its final output is as good as possible. So that's sort of an internal monologue. When it's given a problem, it doesn't start solving it. First, it thinks what is the best possible prompt of this original prompt so that I can solve the question correctly. So that's going to be interesting. Johanna has hand before going there. I just quickly, Lena has the big question. I don't know the answer to this question. That's the big question, I think. So then Johanna was then, and meanwhile I'll read answers question.
Yeah, just then an addition to what you were discussing about the prompts. We did an experiment in Amazon MTurk participants with Jonas Oppelander pertaining to prompt engineering and AI art. And we wanted to investigate how naturally these prompt engineering abilities come for people who are not experienced in creating artworks with generative AI. And it definitely was that you need to learn how to use these modifiers in order to get what you are aiming for. So even though it's really easy, but then if you, for example, in generating AI works, or then if you are utilizing for example, a master thesis or something, we would also need to teach students how to use these. Because for a large amount of participants in our study, the utilizing the modifiers was not explicit, that they didn't really understand how to refine and how it operates, because there are certain logic behind it, but it's not explicit.
Yeah. So this is all part of the bigger question that Lena also asked. What will be the task of human in the future in different areas of work, in art, in science, in programming? And we should design our activities based on those visions, but of course we have to be careful not to be incorrect there. But I'm ready to give up. I don't think I can detect incorrect or improper use of large language model or other AI assistants. So I just have to design activities where, even if they are exploited to the full, the learning outcomes are still met. But I don't know how to do that. But I don't think there's going to be a way to like suspend students based on detecting fraud, because I don't think there's going to be a way to detect fraud. The students will very quickly learn how to use these models not to be detected. Mirja, you have a hand. I just first, Ville is asking, what other large language models or AIs would you recommend trying out? At the moment, the Metas model and models based on that may be interesting, but still they are not at the GPT-4 level. So GPT-4 is the state of the art in chat performance. And it also has the APIs, so you can tweak with the APIs if you have programming knowledge. There is actually I'm going to mention MinGPT. It's a minimal GPT program that can be programmed in 2 hours, and there is actually a YouTube video where that is done, like from scratch programming a GPT in 2 hours. It explains how the neural network works, how the transformer architecture works. So you can check that out if you know programming and you have basic understanding of deep learning and you just want to learn how GPTs work. So take a look at that. It's like for educational purposes and for understanding. And then Jon, a really good point. And I think that in the future we will have open source large language models that are more powerful than OpenAI's closed large language models. And at some point, we probably start to run them on university servers so that students can get like personalized tutoring from them without giving all data to Microsoft. At least I hope that's where we are going in the future. And then Mirja, I think your hand was up.
Yes. Just yesterday, I was discussing with a colleague from another institution, and I told about my first degree at the university. We used to have back then, several decades ago, oral examinations, which means that you have a discussion face to face with the professor, and you have to show how well you are able to handle all the knowledge that you are supposed to have learned.
That's
and
a good idea.
He was telling that he is using what he calls learning discussions with small groups, and that is also a kind of test. He has a small number of students. They prepare us for an exam, and then he asks questions, and he can ask anything, anybody. And so it's not the group giving the answer, but the group can, in a way, be more comfortable than that you would be just one-on-one with.
Yeah.
I think we should also then train towards that, not only that you are learning by yourself in with online materials, but then you have to be like, you can have rehearsals. So just having a final exam, like we used to have one final exam with a professor, that was kind of scary. Yeah. But there are ways if we wish.
So I've been, based on that idea, I've been thinking of piloting this debate format, which is not a new idea, but maybe we can bring it back where the students debate each other. They prepare for the debate and then they are graded. Maybe it can be peer grading by a third party who observes the debate, and the whole thing is recorded so that the teacher can then check on that, and the students can also give their responses to the grades that they got from the peer review. So this sort of a system might scale up very well, and it obviously removes the ChatGPT cheating problem from this. They can prepare with ChatGPT, but they need to be able to debate live when the occasion comes.
So I think we can go on with the discussion. I will stop the recording. But last, I think also another method could be using